is not to hear you in there tonight.
Well, if, for instance, UHF is very, very, very difficult here. Reason why I had wished that I had used LMR 400 or some of those LMR coaxial cables for 70 centimeters here, because there's a repeater up on the Caesar's Head, 442-400, that there's times that it's very difficult for me to get into. But yet right here on this repeater, here on the 2 meters, I'm doing it right now with an HT with no trouble. Some of the same situation over on Glassy Mountain outside of Pickens. There's a 443-450 over there. I was trying it with an HT about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I got real, real noisy. I can go over to 2 meters of 147-195 and do just fine. But where I, let me recycle it. See if it's down in the bottom of a hole. There's leaves on trees on these hills all around me. When they get wet and if the wind blows, I mean, it just tears UHF all to pieces. And it's, but you go to the winter months, December, January, and February, UHF propagation is a lot better. But 2 meters over UHF here where I'm at is much, much better. It's very conditional on leaves, water, and a lot of things like that, and especially if you're deep in a hole. KI4LZI portable.
Let me just make sure I've got it. On to what Andy said, it's a very good observation. And here again, if you tell your friend Chris, I think his name was, if you tell him to look at a table of frequencies and coaxial cable. I have one here on this chart that we've been talking about for weeks now. And reading across 440 megahertz, the first chance you got to have a decent amount, a decent efficiency, around 80%, is with LMR 900. That's very thick cable, and quite expensive as well. Well, with the with RG8, which is kind of my favorite to use up to and including 2 meters, you have not even 40% efficiency at UHF frequencies. So the you get spoiled if you use HF and say RG8, which itself is bigger than 58 or other smaller coaxial cables. You get spoiled. That's easier to run, easier to make turns, even sharp turns, some of them, when laying out your cable. LMR 900 would be a straight line. That does not bend very well. So the physical restriction that you have in the cable that you use, it really means something. To lose 60% of your transmission in the feed line by using smaller cable just makes it real inefficient. I suppose those are two good enough reasons, I think, to. And the proliferation here in the east of the Mississippi, the proliferation of 2 meter repeaters far outweighs the UHF repeaters. KK4JPQ.
For TZW, it's a good question. You can kind of negate a little bit of the loss with the fact that you can build a higher gain directional antenna pretty cheap because they're so small, you know. If you, but and that's about it. I think these mountains are kind of rough on the UHF. Although most DMR repeaters seem to be UHF, but you know, that's the only good thing I found is I can build a large Yagi, which is still pretty small, you know, with a decent amount of gain, kind of take up for some of the small, which I generally use 213, which is pretty crappy coax for, you know, VHF and UHF, 1040 CW.
That's a very good point to make. The length of the coax matters greatly. A short length of 174, which is almost like sewing thread in comparison, anyway. A short length of that, there's not an appreciable loss. It's when you run long runs, 100 feet or more. The chart I have is calibrated for a 100-foot run to make it to make the results equal across all sizes of coax. They just use a 100-foot run. So half of that, you'd have a consequential increase in efficiency. Take a 4JBQ.
So my next project is going to be offset.
KK4JBQ Larry.
Yes.
Richard, K4OW. Is there a way that I could get a copy of that chart about coax for the
he's about totally dropped out. And, well, W, I've got the same type chart that JBQ has here, but I picked it up at the Hammerfest, believe it or not. You see silver tip antennas at the Hammerfest? They usually have it on a plastic, I don't know how you call it, plastic with a paper inside. And that chart's in on it. JI4LZI portable.
Is there a way that you could send me that chart at K4ROW at ARRL.net?
Well, yeah. Right now, I just barely got a working computer, and I don't have a printer or anything like that. So I've got to have the computer I got. Some work done to it here right shortly because that G and H ain't working on it, but I got no way to send it right now, but I picked this up I got over there, I think it's Spartanburg, 4 or 5 years ago. KI4LZI portable.
K4ROW, still there?
4ROW.
Yeah, this is K4. Forgot my calls. K4OIM. Man, that's something to get your own call sign. You can tell I took that out for tripling about an hour ago. But I got not this chart, but I went up to the wire man up here at Glassy Mountain, the one up here in northern Greenville County, and they got these sheets of paper there. It's like a little catalog that tells the products they got and the price of them. And on that very last piece of paper, they've got that same chart in it, and it's for free. I don't know if you could call up there and get Doris to send you a copy of it or not. but I did have one here, and I couldn't find it. I've got the same chart that Andy and Larry's got, but I just used this laminated double-sided. I don't know which side you would say was the front, but on one side it's the band plan showing you where you're allowed to talk and not to talk. And on the other side, it's got the, some of the Q codes and the SWR readings, what they mean, and the chart about the loss and the coax on different lengths. And it's a nice chart. It's about a foot wide by about 20 inches long. It's just barely fitting on my desk in front of my radio and the edge of my desk. But I know I got one up there at the wire man. It's just black and white for the chart we got. It's in all kind of colors. It's just pretty, but it's same information. So you could might could check up there at the wire man. Give them a call and see if they would possibly email you the chart or not. But Doris and them, they pretty friendly. So I hope that'll help you out. So back to you, K4ROW, K4OIM.
I've done business with those people before. It's been a while. Well, I've looked at their website, and it seems to have changed. I may be wrong, but I can call them. I can call them to check them out. I appreciate it. They're nice folks. Seem to be real accommodating. But it's been several years since I've even been up there. Big stuff up, but it's been a while. But thanks a lot. I appreciate it. K4ROW, y'all carry on.
Talk nice about them because Doris is my second cousin. So, but they are nice people out there and really accommodate them. So, yeah, I would check with them. And you get your radio going again, Chad. Is unless you were doubling in, you are just barely copyable. I mean, it's a lot of white noise.
I'll get that fixed. For LCI portable. That 440 repeater I was talking about that's on Caesar's head, like I said earlier, come winter months and leaves off the trees, I can get into it with an HC and rubber duck, but not now.
KL4JQY. So, it reminds me of an article I read a couple months ago, and I was sitting here trying to find it, but the guy up in the mountains talked about the trees and stuff, and he said that a lot of reasons why the 70 centimeters used out west is due to the flat lands. Anything from West Virginia down, we have pretty dense forests, mountains, things like that. So the 2 meter actually propagates a little bit better than the 70 centimeter on the when you have the flat lands like you have out west, Midwest. Just food for thought.
How's the guy portable? The only reason, kind of why 70 centimeters, especially up here in Oconee County and Pitches County, is more than there's 2 meters because, as we all know, 2 meters is about to explode. There ain't no more frequency pairs. But if you live in a bad location like I'm at, you really know it in the summer months. KI4LCI portable.
Talk that any better?
What's your problem?
On handy talkie, and I've moved over here to the base.
But I did ask a question, and I think I doubled with Andy, and I believe he won out. So let me make sure nobody else wants to ask a question.
If you don't want to ask the question, go for it.
KBQ.
K4OIM for ID.
This is an additional comment for Chris. There are other publications, Chris, that are a lot more information than just run coax and efficiency, but very worthwhile. The ARRL operations manual is one, the station operation manual. Every ham ought to have one of those things. A to Z, everything you want to know. It's quite a thick book, and I think they just recently divided it into 6 or 7 smaller books in a sleeve at the same price. So it's easier to handle smaller books. It's about the same trim size, but the operations manual is one place you'll find that. But I should think that if you do a search online, you'll get a very similar chart, and you'd be more specific. It very likely will be in color, and you probably will be able to print it. Now, if you want to laminate it, that's another thing. You can take it to, you know, Staples or, one of the other office outfits, and they will do a double-sided lamination for you if you want to do something like that. But that's great information. The other side of that sheet that we're talking about now from Silver Tip Antennas is another thing that every ham ought to have, and that's a band plan. Even if you are extra class and you have all of the bands and all of the space within our bands, it's good to know where you can transmit, because we share these bands with other services in many cases, and we don't have full power privileges on all the bands. On some bands, say, 60 meters, I think there's a limit of 200 watts peak to peak. So that's just great to have in front of you whenever you operate, to have a band plan in front of you. KK4JBQ.
It's now 100 watts on 60 meters. It started out at 50 and now at 100. Unless they've upped it since the last, as you say, charts and paperwork that I got. KI4LZI4.
Okay, KO4NUE for station ID. Let me make sure I got it. Any other before we move on?
And just to confirm, it is 100 and not 200 watts peak to peak on the channelized 60-meter band. KK4JBQ.
Okay, so let me move on to the next question, and I'm gonna preface the question with, so 2 weeks ago I built my first dipole for the ones who are listening in, and was able to find out what my impedance was on that antenna in free space. So about 56 to 58 ohms is what my antenna analyzer was telling me. I assume that's close enough to 50 to be okay. But the next antenna that I'm going to build is going to be an in-fed. Now, from what I'm reading, an in-fed typically has a high impedance. So that's going to put me in a situation to I'm forced to get a true handle on managing impedance on the antenna. So, understanding that that's just kind of the way my mind works, is to just get myself into situation, and then I'll usually can find a way out, instead of just endlessly thinking about it. Once I've put time and effort into it and I'm committed, then I've got to make it work. So, with that said, I got a feeling I'm going to end back on the Smith chart again, which that's really handy for me to visualize what is happening. So my question is, generally speaking, and I don't want to convolute things until I can get a handle on it. Let me let the repeater drop. I am not able to make a connection in my brain right now on why impedance matching is in a ratio. As in, okay, well, that's a 2-to-1 match, or that's a 4-to-1 match. I was hoping maybe somebody could clarify that just a little bit.
QPQ. Handsets have recently become quite popular, and you're right, it is a little bit confusing, but there's certain things that block it in for you, that help you determine where you start when you want to build one. Do you want a multiple band antenna? Do you want a resonant or only one band and perhaps a little bit of another in a harmonic sense? If you want a resonant antenna, you cut the antenna length for a specific frequency. And if you want a multiple band antenna, you cut a random length, and it's random only in the sense that it is not a resonant length. And there are tables that you can refer to. You can find them online. If you know what search criteria to ask for, it's easy to find them. That gives you the ideal length for a random length. It'll be a length that is not resonant for the band that you're working on. I hope I didn't confuse you there. The logic is there. If you let me ask if you understood what I've just said.
I got it.
Let me check my notes here. With a resonant antenna, you'll want to use an impedance transformer, because, as you mentioned, the impedance is terribly high on any antenna where your feed point is at one end of it rather than in the middle. This is an extreme case. Resonant length of wire, but your feed point's at one end of the wire. Your impedance will be in the thousands of ohms. 3, 4, 5,000 ohms. So you need to transform that impedance to something more what your radio wants to see, 50 ohms, right? Somewhere between 47 and 60 would be reasonable. And for that, you'll need a 49-to-1, a 64-to-1. You'll need a ratio of windings on the core of the transformer. Usually people use for these, they use a toroidal coil. It is donut-shaped. And so your impedance from the primary side to the secondary side is a ratio of 49-to-1, 64-to-1, something like that. KK4JBQ.
You're saying that the ratio comes from the amount of windings on the primary compared to the amount of windings on the secondary. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is. And it's unavoidable. There's a little bit of math involved here. We can't, especially when talking antennas, you can't avoid math altogether. So if you have three turns on the primary and 12 turns on the secondary, that's a 4-to-1 ratio, is it not? Yes. And it sort of goes like that. The higher ratios will bring impedance down, a much greater impedance down to our 50 ohm requirement. So that was a resonant length of wire. The random length of wire requires, interestingly enough, a 9-to-1 ratio in the transformer winding. And in any event, these are, well, they'll operate most efficiently if you realize that you're not offering any ground or any radials or any counterpoise. All those things are related if you use just the end-fed wire. You'd be best to ground that radio and consequently the antenna connected to it, or provide just one radial or one counterpoise. The difference between those is where one is on the ground or above the ground. it's just best to mind the antenna's need for the other side. It will always, an antenna, if it's going to work as an antenna, it's going to have two sides, whether you're aware of it or not. It's almost metaphysical. It must have another side, and it'll find it someplace, even if it's just the open air. KK4JBQ.
All right, I think I'm going to try to digest that for the rest of the week and just go ahead and narrow down what frequency. I think with the end-fed too, I think I'm going to cut it resonant and just kind of move up in steps a little bit. I don't want to get just so overwhelmed with a super complicated antenna that I get frustrated with it. I don't mind a little bit of frustration, but when there's too much, it's just not helpful. So I think I'll stick to a resonant end-fed and try to manage that as far as capacitance or inductance goes, and just figure out the whole Smith chart thing, because there's just a lot going on that chart, and until I have a need for one of the arcs or one of the radials or one of the compasses on the Smith chart, I'll never learn what it is. But if I'm able to plot it and see it, then my next step is, well, that's not where it's supposed to be, so now I need to manage it and control it. So that's kind of the way I'm thinking, and that usually works pretty well for me. So I think that's good enough for now, Larry. Let me get a handle on that first, and then next Tuesday I'll get another question. I mean, I'm get a little deeper in it.
One reference that I would give you is a fellow who mainly operates SOTA, Summits on the Air, and these end-fed antennas are great because they're very lightweight and they pack up easy. And if you're, you know, hiking up you know, a couple thousand vertical feet, you want to carry lightweight stuff. And he has some really good YouTube videos on making these antennas yourself. And you learn a great deal. Even if you don't make one, you'll learn a great deal about them by watching his videos. His call sign is K6ARK.
ARK. Okay. All right. I'll check that out. Okay. So one more question after this comment, but this book that Walt gave me, the handbook. So there's a complete section in here on antennas, and they've broken things down, and it's actually pretty enjoyable or informative is what I mean. So I just want to let you know, reading the book, first comment or the first sentence in Antenna Fundamentals is, which I thought was very interesting, is that antennas belong to a class of devices called transducers. The term is derived from two Latin words meaning literally to lead across or to transfer. And I thought, man, that's pretty neat, you know. I know that sounds kind of corny, but I thought that was really neat. And I never thought of them being transducers, but that's kind of exactly what they are, you know. But at any rate, yeah, let you comment on that, and then we'll move on to the last question. I still got it. The last question is, tell me everything you know about 10 meters.
Good spot cycle the way it is, it's on the up climb. Chad, excuse me, before the sunspot cycle died off, I had bought a 10-meter mobile radio at Radio Shack. Can't remember the name of it. I think it was XT10 or something like that. But I think I gave $95 for it. And I didn't have no antenna. But I had an extension cord. I cut the ends off of it and split that thing. And I cut it, each side of it, I think about 8'6". Fed it with some coax in the center. And I didn't have, put it up as an inverted V, and I didn't have that thing up. I know the highest point on it couldn't have been up 15 foot high. And I worked the world on 10 meters with 25 watts. 10 meters is amazing once the sunspot cycle gets peaked out, and it's on its way up now.
Make sure I got it. Already made an observation. So last week the question was, tell me everything you know about 80 meters. This week the question is, tell me everything you know about 10 meters. And I know all HF is dependent on sunspots somehow. I don't exactly understand how right now. Other than it being, it affects how the waves travel, I guess, through electromagnetic something. But here's my observation, is that, well, I'll tell you what, let me hold off before, let me hear what Larry has to say about 10 meters before I say that. So go ahead, Larry.
Some doozies of questions. I guess the scope of the question, tell me all you know about a particular band. As I said earlier, there are similarities among all the bands. And thankfully, there are differences that make them unique. And as Walt said, 10 Meters is a band that is, well, it's a band with an attitude. It's seasonal. There are months in the spring beginning late May, early June, and then in the fall. And it has to do with earth weather and space weather, both of them. Because we are ourselves, imagine you're looking out the window in the International Space Station, and you're looking down on your antenna. Now, if that's a, I don't know how many thousand mile view above the Earth that is, but that's how insignificant your antenna is. That it works at all is a marvelous thing to me. A little piece of wire strung up in a tree, as Walt said. And if you're interested in a speaker wire antenna, just do a search on YouTube, and you'll see people make speaker wire antennas of various lengths. Great success, easy to do, cost you less than $20 to make it. And so it can be magic in a sense, but it's good. It's good that you're curious to know how the magic works. To combine what I said earlier when we talked about 80 meters, if you understand 80 meters, you'll know a great deal about all the others, including 10. But the fact that the weather closer to the surface matters, but the weather, especially in the ionosphere above the surface of the Earth, it's a layer of highly charged ions that are affected greatly by radiation from the sun and the magnetic influences from of the sun on the Earth's magnetic field. It just will be hard to put into words over the air. It is all of that and more. To understand it is kind of a pursuit that you're you make discoveries and realizations for years and years. To operate on one band and then switch to another band and then switch to another band, well, that would be an exercise in frustration, I think. Picking one band that you like, and maybe 6 or 10 because of its being peculiar and responsive to solar storms, sunspots, tropics that are ducting. 6 and 10 are magic in that way. It responds to many things. When it's good, it's good, and when it's bad, it's just not there at all. Does that help a little? KK4JBQ.
So, but here's my observation. Is that I understand that all HF is affected by charged particles in the air. But like I said last week, I now I have a reference. So the two of you gave me basically a full paragraph on 80 meters. But with 10 meters, I have something to compare that to. And I know it's comparing apples to oranges, but I didn't hear any of sunspot activity. There was both of you mentioned a little bit of sunspot affecting 80 meters in some cases. I believe that's what I wrote. And on 10 meters, it's pretty much affected by sunspots. And is that a fair comparison?
KI4LZI4. A 10-meter antenna up, so I can't say what is true or not, but there's a couple hams over here in Oconee County, KJ4LXD and W4GOG, that does a 10-meter net at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday. Now, I can't be certain on the frequency because I was just listening on the scanner and heard it kind of, just secondary, but I think they said 28455. And I'll tell you about the 10 meters I'm aware of on the FM part that I hear here on the scanner during the summer. On the FM part down at 29620, especially in the summer months, late spring, and we're starting to get where it ain't coming in now, but there's a KQ2H repeater up there in New York State that comes in on 29620. And when the propagation is super good, it's just as good as this repeater here is. It knocks this scanner signal meter off the meter, and you can hear them up there talking. And when it's going to the west, there's another repeater. I done forgot the call sign of it in Dallas-Fort Worth. On 29660, Dallas-Fort Worth. And I'm hearing these FM 10-meter repeaters just on a scanner and scanner antenna. KI4LZI4.
So let me make sure I got it. The first thing I'd like to say to Larry, Andy, and Walt, this is KL4NUE for station ID, is that I just want to make I am asking your opinion on this, and I'm making notes of your opinion for my use, and I just don't want y'all to feel like y'all are on the spot. Just tell me what you know. And Andy, I've got K2UH, and I've got two frequencies written down here, 29620, 29660. And Walt, I've got your sunspot comments, and Larry, your comment about bands with an attitude, May, June, and fall. But my question is, and it's going to sound smart alecky, and I don't mean it that way, is it why didn't y'all say anything like that with 80 meters? Is it affected that bad? I mean, is it affected less because of the sunspots?
I got to get out here probably after this comment here at 11 to take my answer. As far as 10 meters and those 10 FM repeaters, that's the only part in HF where there's any FM repeaters at. And as we get into the winter, those repeaters, you'll hardly ever hear them. Hardly ever hear them coming. It's always late spring, and primarily during the summer. I hear when I'm monitoring this repeater and others and have those 10 FM in there, sometimes I hear them going and coming in. It's like he said, there's many different things that affects 10 meters. Y'all go ahead and carry on. I got to get out for now, though. KI4LZI4.
Thanks, Andy. I appreciate it.
I hear you, Andy. You are a wealth of information, KK4JBQ.
And Andy, I really appreciate you sticking around and helping us out here. 7-3, Andy.
So I'm hearing that this is affected by weather and sunspot propagation. And I'm just wondering, now it's got me wondering why. I mean, I'm sure 80 meters is too, but it just sounds like to me comparatively that 10 meters is a little bit more sensitive than 80. Would that be a correct statement?
When it's working, let me see, I've got it. All of the considerations regarding antennas should be after, I suppose it's, as I've mentioned before, it's good to know antennas generally speaking. What does it do? It's a transducer. How does it do it? And then, you know, you sort of have an idea about that, but then you have the question that I've heard many, many, many new hams have. On what band should I start with? Where should I put my first investment in antennas? And then we get around to the conversation about how much do you want to invest? If what you want to invest in is an HT, well then you're not considering, and you're a technician. You just passed the license exam. This is where I've heard this question a lot. What should be my first radio? Well, considering the expense of multiband HF radios, we talk about HTs. We're going to be talking about 2 meters, 70 centimeters. That's a whole different conversation. But if you open yourself up to HF, as you have by having your general license, that opens up a whole new world of antennas, of rigs, of operations, of the interest that you might have. So what interest do you have? Do you want to make contacts worldwide? Do you want to make contacts just in the United States and, you know, let's say North America? At what time of day? When are you going to be free to operate? Only at night? Early in the morning? All day long? All these things are questions that you ask yourself, and they will guide you as to what band to choose. I'll tell you that the most popular band, because it is worldwide during the day, and it also is quite good at night, is 20 meters. 20 meters is the most popular ham band, bar none. The antennas are manageable in small spaces, but then, as I said before, getting a hold of one band and understanding it, most of what you can transfer a lot of your understanding to other bands once you wish to operate on them. KK4JBQ.
Okay, so I will take the information with 10 meters and just store it away for me, so when I get ready to experiment with 10 meters, I can kind of know what to expect. So the other thing I want to tell you is that I keep a small logbook here and beside the radio. I guess everybody does, but one thing that I have found very interesting is that I have made a full page of contacts. On that full page of contacts, I have made 6 of those contacts were on 80 meters. had on this 2 weeks ago, I got my homemade antenna up. So now what I'm looking at is that I have three contacts on the store-bought antenna, the mystery antenna, and I have three contacts on my antenna that I built. And there is, I'm already noticing a difference just in the three contacts, I mean the six contacts. So the antenna that I built, my distance, I've been able to make contacts a little bit further away with my antenna opposed to the mystery antenna. Now, I'm not saying anything negative about the mystery antenna at all, and that may not have anything to do with the antenna, but what I'm trying to tell you is that now I have a reference of some sort that I can look back and say, well, at least I'm able to make contact. So with my antenna, I've made a contact in Maryland, Oklahoma, and Virginia. But with the other antenna, as far as I've been able to get, is New Jersey, Virginia, and Texas. I don't think that's got anything to do with maybe the antenna. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't know what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Thank you. I'm really torn as to what, you know, everything wants to come out of my head at once. I'm sorry. And I'll have to speak to what some other people, experiences that they've shared with me. A friend of mine is in a European country, quite far north, almost to the Arctic Circle. And in order that it's a survival thing for him. So he keeps experimenting. He keeps judging where he can make contacts with different equipment, changing out equipment. And he's very... he's a complicated fella. He's terribly smart. And he's a good builder. He understands the hobby quite a bit. And he has that survival driver. And what that tells me is that someone will have, you may have lots of questions, but unless the answers to the questions feed your interest in what you think is most important in this hobby, then you won't have as much thirst for the answer, as much drive to get the answer. My observation for the number of contacts that he has and where they are, he uses Whisper, which is a reporting surface to report where your signal has been picked up in a very wide area. It could be the continental United States, for instance. Where were you heard? Well, you can get that from Whisper. There's a network. It's always active, and the reporting is something you can get over the internet with a computer. These draws you a nice map and a point-to-point, so you can tell whether your the antenna that you have is very directional or it's omnidirectional, and all of that. Is that interesting? KK4JPQ.
I gotta check that out, because maybe now I'm thinking I need to just need to slow down just a little bit, and maybe I don't need to jump right into that next antenna just yet. With six contacts total on the antenna, that's I mean, I've made more than six, but if they're two states away, I usually don't make, just don't write it in my logbook. But maybe I just need to hang out here a little bit and just get some more data and see kind of what my antenna's doing. I know it's working. I just now I need to maybe just focus on, okay, well, how well is it working? What was the sunspot number? What was the weather? What was this and that when it was working? So do you think it would be possible for me to collect enough information for me to make a connection? In other words, so on 22 September, I made a contact in California. The weather was, the sunspot number was, and if I have enough of that information, then maybe I could kind of make a quick connection. Well, hey, I ought to be able to get to California today. Or, yes, you know, the number's just not looking good for me. Furthest I'm going to be able to get today maybe is Tennessee. Am I going to be able to do that with my antenna and kind of predict maybe what I can do or what I can't do?